You are listening to WBCR LP, Great Barrington. Hello and welcome to the Audio Book Review. I am your host, Jason Brown. On this program, I will be reviewing audiobooks that are popular and audiobooks that are out of print, but always audiobooks that I believe increase the quality of life, and therefore make the world a better place. I'll also be talking about the ins and outs of the audiobook industry, an insider's take, as well as various narrators, engineering techniques, and production companies. Guests will be included. Narrators, writers, producers, reviewers, engineers, who play an important part. And finally, the booksellers, who also are integral. I produce audiobooks for Berkshire Media Artists, BMA Studios, and have listened to many, as well as gained a certain knowledge of how the industry works and how audiobooks are put together. I find it fascinating, and I wanted to share that knowledge. As many of us do listen to audiobooks, audiobook purchases increase at a rate of around 5% a year. According to the Audio Publishers Association, the APA, who I will be referring to frequently in this program, what does that say about how audiobooks will be read in the future? Nothing will take the place of a real bound book. I like the smell of old books, you know, the various combinations of pigments, inks, and pulp. You don't get that with an audiobook. Books will always be my first choice. But there's nothing like the experience of great writing pronounced. That's what fills the seats at Shakespeare and Company, Berkshire Theatre Festival, Barrington Stage, as well as Mixed Company. You find it less and less in film and television, unless you dig into the BBC vault. But you do get it with audio, and we love it. This being the first show, I thought at great length on what the first review should be. I considered starting off, for good luck, with one of the many audios recorded of the Dalai Lama's writing, which are great, and, without a doubt, makes the world a better place. But I settled on my favorite, that being one of a great writer and a great reader. But first I wanted to read you this interesting little article from the latest Audiophile issue, which I think is important and makes the world a better place. Audiophile is an international audiobook review magazine full of a lot of good wisdom about this industry. I don't bump into a lot of audiobook producers in the Berkshires, so this keeps me in touch with the latest trends. I've actually met the publisher, Robin, and she's a lovely lady I was happy to discover, and modestly very smart. The title of this column is called Hear, Hear. Pretty cute. The first hear being spelled H-E-A-R, second one H-E-R-E. In fact, Hear, Hear is the name of a show at WBCR, heard live at 3:30 to 5 on Wednesdays, hosted by Nick Ring, Scott Marks, and Todd Lewis. It's a weekly calendar of musical events. They play full tracks. It's a great show. I encourage you to tune into that. Of course, we thought of the title first. An audiophile probably got it from us, as a lot of people do. A lot of great ideas come out of this radio station. There's a picture of Brad Meltzer in front of a microphone with headphones on, and evidently this is part of a movement to get kids to start listening to audio. So Brad Meltzer, if you don't know Brad Meltzer, he's best-selling author, The Tenth Justice, and he's also the writer on the Justice League. I think he writes for Jack and Bobby. Now here's the article. It's called, Look Who Got Caught Listening. What exactly do Horton, LL Cool J, Frank McCourt, Brad Meltzer, and Jackie Collins have in common? They've all been caught listening and are part of a national public awareness initiative, Get Caught Listening. The authors and celebs have posed and recorded endorsements of the joys of listening and the educational value of audiobooks. The posters available to libraries and bookstores and the sound clips offered as public service announcements show each listener's distinct personality. Author Brad Meltzer got involved with the project because, now this is great, he says some good things here. Quote, without question, some of the best new ideas in publishing are coming from the audio side of things. Everyone loves to rave about ebooks and all the shiny electronica, but it's the audio folks who are bringing in new readers. Love that, and that's why we have this show. He continues, and moving the ever-shifting cutting edge. From the start, the Hatchet Audio and Digital Media Group has been pushing those limits. When it comes to a new idea, they're among the first I approach. The Get Caught Listening campaign isn't just a stunt, it's the acknowledgement of a movement. Now, I like that. It puts audio in a very good light. They're pushing audiobooks in schools and libraries. Meltzer mentions that it's a movement, but I think it's more like a revolution in publishing. That might be a little strong, but hopefully youth will start listening, if they're not reading, and learning how words sound and are pronounced. And I think this is what the Get Caught Reading Group is going for. Better World. Well, back to my review. The title of that audiobook I mentioned before is called Dance to the Music of Time by the great author Anthony Pohl. I'm using the pronunciation Pohl because that's how David Case pronounces it. Most of us would pronounce it Powell, of course. Recorded by Books on Tape and read by the great David Case. This is currently out of print, which is terrible. It's one of the best audios ever made, and available only through the library system. Thank you, libraries, for preserving and making accessible some of the finest audio ever recorded. Without the libraries, this would be gone. Which is, of course, to say that there are other great audiobooks recently published at bookstores and the internet, and I will be getting to those with anticipation. Now, a little bit of background about Books on Tape. Now, the Books on Tape company actively attempted, often failing, according to Wikipedia, if you believe them, to protect its company name from generic use. I mean, what were they expecting? I even end up telling people when they become confused about what I do that I do Books on Tape. And I always think it's like a bookseller telling someone that they do Barnes & Noble. Doesn't make much sense in some ways, certainly grammatically. And it's misleading, but then Books on Tape is about as generic as you can get for a title of an audiobook company, but it's probably, on the other hand, the most memorable audiobook publisher there is. Name another. You can't think of one, can you? I can hardly think of one. So it works. Other huge audiobook companies, much bigger than Books on Tape at the moment, like Highbridge Audio, Blackstone, and Renaissance Audio, do not have this problem with generic use. Then again, nobody not in the industry knows their name. So generic works, but you pay the price of being perhaps a common phrase. But I think maybe that was their intention, you know, household word. As indeed they should be, because I love Books on Tape, as everyone else does that I talk to. And even though they were consumed by the great Audible.com, which was in turn eaten by Amazon.com, amazing how it works, isn't it? Their books are still around. I love them. They were the first company to get great audio out into the world. And they set the trend for Blackstone and Naxos Audio, and recorded David Case reading Anthony Trollope and Anthony Powell, two literary geniuses whose works may never be recorded again. It's too hard and very expensive now. Get them while you can, but only through the libraries at the moment. But they will be played on this radio station, WBCR-LP, Great Barrington, one of the great radio stations. Time for this announcement.
Hi, this is Pearl Clegg. There's nothing like the pleasure of getting lost in a good audiobook. It can transport you to another time and place where anything might happen, and usually does. Isn't it time for you to get caught listening? If I were an audiobook, I'd be The Big C by Langston Hughes, read by Alice Walker. I'm always getting caught listening to my favorite audiobook on the train from Atlanta to New York City. What I'm most likely to be caught doing while getting caught listening is looking out the window so I can watch America roll by. I find audiobooks to be as close as I can get to those childhood moments before bedtime when my mother read out loud to my sister and me before we went to sleep. Audiobooks connect us to the ancient tradition of storytellers and griots whose spoken words define who we are and who we can be. This is Pearl Clegg. A good audiobook speaks for itself. Get caught listening.
During platinum workouts, in between recording sessions, I could tune into the sounds of my audiobook 24/7. This is LL Cool J, inviting you to get caught hearing the rhythms of a good audiobook. A good story speaks for itself. Get caught listening, baby.
That was Pearl Clegg, author of Seen It All and Done the Rest, and LL Cool J. Nice audio voices. Those are probably the best of those Get Caught Listening PSAs. There's some nice ones by Frank McCourt, too, and Valerie Bertinelli. It's kind of cute. Play those later. If you look on Wikipedia, there's an interesting history of how audiobooks got started on the Books on Tape page. I admit, I didn't know how they got started. Evidently, Congress in 1931 passed the Talking Book Program, which was intended to help blind adults read. But they were hard to distribute, of course. Clunky aluminum discs that weighed a lot when you stack them together, and they weren't that easy to make. Now, does anyone know when the first cassette was made? We're going to learn a lot on this show. In 1963, Philips Electronics came out with the first cassette tape. I actually thought it was early 70s, as I thought it was all reel-to-reel up until then. We so look down on cassettes now, but when that first came out, people were amazed. Sony followed soon afterwards. And 15 years later, the Walkman was invented. I think they'd come out with that sooner. Eventually selling 150 million units. Where are they now? Not biodegrading, I'm sure. Alan and Laura of Earth Radio might have something to say about that, not to mention all those cassettes. Not exactly collector's items like vinyl records. Anyway, audiobooks up until the 70s were mainly on records. I remember listening to Alec Guinness reading Dame Sitwell on record, and I would give my house for that recording. Not really, but it was amazing, and I'm trying to track that down. In 1970, Books on Tape Corporation was formed and started rental plans for audiobook distribution. They expanded libraries, and by the middle of the 80s, the audio publishing business grew to $7 billion a year in retail value. And all these new companies sprang up, the Recorded Books, Chivers Audiobooks, Cadman, Nightingale Conant. They were the first self-help publishers who published Anthony Robbins and Zig Ziglar, as well as Deepak Chopra, who I like, and Wayne Dyer, who I also like. But I do love Books on Tape for doing this recording, which I am about to play, as well as many other brilliant audio classics, and for still being around, even if it's only in libraries, where ironically they first started. Here's a segment of Dance to the Music of Time by Anthony Pohl, read by David Case. And this is from Casanova's Chinese Restaurant. To give you a brief background, this is from a 12-volume set of a series of novels that's essentially a Proustian recollection of the intricate lives of five school friends. And it's a recreation of upper middle-class life from the First World War through the 60s. In this scene, Nick Jenkins, the protagonist, is meeting his old friend Moreland at a pub, which has obviously been bombed out, so World War II has already started.
A Dance to the Music of Time, second movement by Anthony Pohl, Casanova's Chinese Restaurant. Chapter 1. Crossing the road by the bombed-out public house on the corner, and pondering the mystery which dominates vistas framed by a ruined door, I felt for some reason glad the place had not yet been rebuilt. A direct hit had egg-sized even the ground floor, so that the basement was revealed as a sunken garden, or site of archaeological excavation long abandoned, where great sprays of willow herb and ragwort flowered through cracked paving stones. Only a few broken milk bottles and a laceless boot, recalling contemporary life. In the midst of this somber grotto, five or six fractured steps had withstood the explosion and formed a projecting island of masonry on the summit of which rose the door. Walls on both sides were shrunk away, but along its lintel in niggling copybook handwriting could still be distinguished the word Ladies. Beyond, on the far side of the twin pillars and crossbar, nothing whatever remained of that promised retreat, the threshold falling steeply to an abyss of rubble, a triumphal arch erected laboriously by dwarfs, or the gateway to some unknown forbidden domain, the lair of sorcerers. Then, all at once, as if such luxurious fantasy were not already enough, there came from this unexplored country the song, strong and marvellously sweet, of the blonde woman on crutches, that itinerant prima donna of the highways, whose voice I had not heard since the days years before, when Morland and I had listened in Gerrard Street, the afternoon he had talked of getting married. When we had bought the bottle labelled Tawny Wine, port flavour, which even Morland had been later unwilling to drink. Now, once more above the rustle of traffic, that same note swelled on the grimy air, contriving a transformation scene to recast those purlieus into the vision of an oriental dreamland. Artificial, if you like, but still quite alluring under the shifting clouds of a cheerless Soho sky. Pale hands I loved beside the Shalimar. Where are you now? Who lies beneath your spell? In the end, most things in life, perhaps all things, turn out to be appropriate. So it was now, for here before me lay the vestigial remains of the Mortimer, where we had first met, the pub in which our friendship had begun. As an accompaniment to Moreland's memory, music was natural, even imperative. But the repetition of a vocal performance so stupendously apt was scarcely to be foreseen. A flawless angle of the wall, to which a few lumps of plaster and strips of embossed paper still adhered, was all that remained of the alcove where we had sat, a recess which also enclosed the mechanical piano, into which, periodically, Moreland would feed a penny to invoke one of those fortissimo tunes, belonging to much the same period as the blonde singer's repertoire. She was closer now, herself hardly at all altered by the processes of time, perhaps a shade plumper, working her way down the middle of the empty street, until, framed within the rectangle of the doorway, she seemed to be gliding along under the instrumentality of some occult power, and about to sail effortlessly through its enchanted portal. Pale hands pink-tipped, like lotus buds that float, on those cool waters where we used to dwell. Moreland and I had afterwards discussed the whereabouts of the Shalimar, and why the locality should have been the haunt of pale hands and those addicted to them. "A nightclub, do you think?" Moreland had said. "A bordel, perhaps. Certainly an establishment catering for exotic tastes, and I expect not very healthy ones, either. How I wish there was somewhere like that where we could spend the afternoon. That woman's singing has unsettled me. What nostalgia. It was really splendid. Whom do you lead on rapture's roadway far? What a pertinent question. But where can we go? I feel I must be amused. Do have a brilliant idea. I'm in the depths of gloom, to be precise. Let's live for the moment. Tea at Casanova's Chinese restaurant? That would be suitably oriental after the song. What do you think? I haven't been there for ages. It wasn't very exciting on my last visit. Besides, I never felt quite the same about Casanova's after that business of Barnby and the waitress. It would be cheaper to drink tea at home, and no less Chinese, as I have a packet of lapsang.
As you like.
But why do they dwell on the cool waters? I can't understand the preposition. Were they in a boat?
A habit of Moreland's was to persist eternally with any subject that caught his fancy, a characteristic to intensify in him resolute approach to a few things after jettisoning most outward forms of seriousness. A love of repetition sometimes fatiguing to friends, when Moreland would return unmercifully to some trivial matter less amusing to others than to himself.
"Do you think they were in a boat?" he went on. "The poem is called A Kashmiri Love Song. My aunt used to sing it.
Houseboats are a feature of Kashmir, aren't they?
Kipling characters go up there to spend their leave.
When we lived in Fulham, my aunt used to sing that song to the accompaniment of the pianoforte.
He paused in the street and offered there and then a version of the piece as loudly trilled by his aunt, interrupting himself once or twice to emphasize contrast with the rendering we'd just heard.
I think the accent that he gave Moreland was upper-class London. David Case had a repertoire of something like 90 accents. He was like the Henry Higgins of audio and just used it for our entertainment. I mean, wasn't that superb? The engineering might be a little out of date. I even tried to fix it up a little bit, but who cares? I must confess my first trance-like audio experience was Harry Potter, of course, and The Sorcerer's Stone, read by Jim Dale, produced by Random House Audio. It made a 26-hour journey by car seem like 2 hours, and I was actually disappointed when I arrived at my longed-for destination, for I hadn't finished listening to the audio. And I used Harry Potter for another two trips before I realized it had the effect of road food carbohydrates for the mind. It got me to my destination in an excited state, but what had I gained, really, besides a seemingly quick journey? I first started to listen to audiobooks when I had a long commute, and I got tired of my music repertoire. I listened to it repeatedly, and I was looking for a new avenue. I was spending hours of my life in the car, and it occurred to me that although I had a decent education, there were huge gaps. Many books that I had not read, like Anthony Trollope, anything by him. Also, Proust's Remembrance of Things Past, which I also confess I had not read. Now was a great opportunity, as I drove off to work to fill in those gaps which I couldn't possibly have done in my quick years of college. Life changed for me at that point. I looked forward to my trips, and also realized that there were many works that I wanted to read and listen to, but that had not been recorded. And I was thinking, you know what, I could read it myself and record and listen to it. And I thought, well, that's redundant. And I was thinking, how hard can it be to do an audiobook? I now know otherwise. At least that illusion got me started. I just want to talk about David Case briefly and Anthony Pohl. These guys are amazing. This is a profile of David Case from Audiophile, the International Audiobook Review. And they say, from an early age, David Case spent hours mimicking the great actors and comedians of Britain's radio and theater and doing funny voices and skits with his brother. At 21, he requested a tape recorder for his birthday, a device his parents had never heard of. After performing for years in many BBC radio plays, David came to this country in 1976. The narration of audiobooks became a passion for David, and after 12 years, he has lent his voice and talents to more than 800 audiobooks for Books on Tape, Blackstone Audiobooks, Audio Editions, Durkin Hayes, and others. 800 audiobooks. These are 10 hours. Some of them are 15, 18 hours long. Okay? That's a lot of recording. David's favorite author is Anthony Trollope, which I'll be playing on other programs, whose works seem to have been written for an audio reader. I love that. The way he read it, it certainly was. Trollope and Dickens provide David with full rein for his character voices. Now, of course, David Case died in 2005, and he has enriched my life and has undoubtedly raised the standard on how books were to be read. Now, I could go on for a long time about Anthony Pohl, but that's really for a book program, although, of course, he plays a huge part of this audiobook. Neil Brennan writes in his book, Anthony Pohl, that two of Pohl's early novels are among the 100 best novels of the century, and the vast sweep of The Music of Time makes it one of the artistic accomplishments of our era. And that's true. These novels are works of art. They're wonderful. They're classics, and often overlooked, although big sellers when they first came out. Of course, he was an Oxford graduate, as was Evelyn Waugh, who, of course, David Case has read as well, but, you know, we can't dwell on David Case the entire time. And his father was Welsh, and his mother was a Damoc. And the Damocs were charged with the responsibility of defending the newly crowned British monarchs. So he comes from a long line of English tradition, family, loyalty, and duty. And this is so much in his writing, especially in the leading protagonist of Dance to the Music of Time, Nick Jenkins, beautifully portrayed. And that's about it for our show. That's one audiobook reviewed, 206,927 remaining. That's how many audiobooks there are in print, according to Bowker Books in Print. And by the way, there are 5.8 million books in print, so audio is some catching up to do. And I've got a few ideas. Thank you for joining us on the audiobook review. We hope you had a good time. Join us next program. I will be having a guest from the cast of Shakespeare and Company's The Ladies' Man. She plays Yvonne, the young wife, but don't wait until then to go out and see it. It is superbly entertaining. As is my guest, who is also a wonderful audio artist, I will be asking her about the difference between stage and studio, and I know she will have some interesting answers. Hope to see you then. You've been listening to WBCRLP 97.7 FM, Great Barrington.